You're listening to this week's podcast by the Not So Famous Sports Reporters with your hosts, Austin Klein and Nicholas Jarvin.
Alright, so this week on the podcast, we're going to be covering some Lions analysis of their week one matchup against the New York Giants. Of course, that came in a 35-14 win for the Lions starting off the season right. And some other general NFL news from the week, maybe a little bit of fantasy insight. We'll also be talking about the West Michigan Whitecaps and the emergence of Midwest League MVP Wynton Bernard. And the last thing we'll talk about today is some MLB news to talk about September, some of the September call-ups throughout the league, the playoff races. Nick will give you a little bit of touches on those. He'll give you some insight on what he thinks are going to happen down the stretch in the pennant race.
Now, moving on to the first segment of this week's show. As I said in the opening, we're going to give you a little bit of analysis of what we think is the big news in week one of the NFL. So the first point, all the preseason, I said I was very excited about the Lions' new offense and how Jim Caldwell and the new offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi, was going to run it. And the big question was, were they going to be able to turn Stafford into the quarterback that the Lions thought he would be when they drafted him number one?
Yes, Stafford went 22 for 32 and threw for 346 yards. But the most important thing I think of the whole game was that he didn't throw an interception, which has been one of Stafford's big problems as far as decision-making, and you know, he threw a lot of interceptions. The only guys throwing more, I think, or one of the only, is Eli Manning, who they faced, and Eli had quite the opposite day of Stafford, so I think it shows that Stafford's really growing, and hopefully he keeps it up. I know the Giants aren't the best team in the world, but he threw really well, and he got a lot of guys. He hit them more than once. He got Golden Tate 6 times and Reggie Bush 6 times, along with Calvin 7 times, and then he got he threw the tight end twice, and then Bell caught a pass. So, you know, it wasn't like you know, a world record performance by Stafford, but it was really solid, and it's what the Lions need to win. They don't need Stafford to be, you know, this amazing legendary quarterback. They just need him to be good, and that's what he was. And he did a really good job the first game. Now he's got a little bit of a test facing Carolina. They're a little bit of a better team, but I liked what I saw out of Stafford. Obviously, Calvin Johnson, 164 yards. And that 67-yarder to set the tone for the Lions' season. The Lions are going to do good in the first half, I think. They got a few tough games, but as long as they win one or two of those, they just got to stay alive in the second half this year. But it looks good so far. I'm not going to get too overconfident in one game, but Stafford has done his job so far. That's all you can ask.
Yeah, the big indicator of where the Lions' season will go is how they start off the second half. They made the playoffs, and then they didn't do so hot, and then last year they started off really well. I believe the record was something like 7-2, and then
they lost, what, 6 of their last 7 last year?
Yeah.
Yes, that wasn't very... I mean, they could have won the division like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah,
nobody wanted to win that.
There was nobody. Yeah, like Nick just said, there was nobody that wanted to win that division last year. Rodgers was out for a little while, and the Vikings didn't have a quarterback. You know, AP can't keep that team on his own. But yeah, as long as Stafford keeps playing the way he played in week one, the Lions definitely have a good chance at winning the NFC North this year. In their week two matchup against Carolina, it's going to be rough on the defense because obviously the secondary still needs work. Cam Newton's going to be back. He's a dual threat quarterback. He can pick up yards with his legs as well as he's got a pretty good arm. So.
The good thing is maybe Newton will be a little more lenient on running because his injury to his, wasn't it his ribs?
Yeah.
So he's going to be, hopefully he'll be a little more lenient running. And he called Ndamukong Suh Donkey Kong Suh 5 times in his press conference along with his fellow Auburn teammate Nick Fairley. That was his quote. he might, you know, that was his main concern. So if Sue can get in there and maybe rough Newton up a little bit in the first quarter, second quarter, you know, get a few sacks, maybe Newton is sore. You never know how that will affect the game, too, because you don't quite know how healthy Newton is. I mean, if he had to sit out week one, you know, it's not obviously feeling too great, but you don't know how much he healed this week either. He really knows how he feels. So hopefully Sue can get in there and get a few sacks or Fairley or somebody on the line, anybody. And, you know, that might help the Lions a lot more than it would help them usually because Newton's been hurting. But the Lions have a little bit of a rough two-game stretch coming up. They got the Panthers and then the Packers at home. But then they got a little bit of easier schedule. They got to go to face the Jets, then they get the Bills at home, and then they got to go face the Vikings. But those aren't going to be the toughest games in the world. So if they can really pull off a win against the Panthers, that'll be huge for their whole season. It could really change the outlook of it. And it could really prove that the Lions are here to say this year. It could be a statement type of game. But they need the a good attack, a running attack, and a passing attack. And Stafford looks good, so they just need the Bush-Bell combination to continue to do good this week. And hopefully everything, I mean, it could be a closer game than most people expect. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, that was my next point. Even if Stafford can keep it up this week, maybe throw an interception. But let's hope he can keep those numbers down.
Yeah.
But the main point I'm trying to make here is that the Lions are going to have to get the running game going this week. I mean, Carolina's got a pretty good front seven, but we're going to have to find a way to get Bush and especially Bell involved this week and at least have one of them rush for 100 yards because Stafford won't be able to do it all on his
own. Yes, and the main thing about Stafford is not to throw an interception at the wrong time. It seemed like a lot of his interceptions were in times where we didn't need him to throw interceptions or needed the, you know, where it hurt us the least, I guess, would be the best wording for it. And Stafford's a good quarterback, and he has had his fair share of game-winning drives, but he just needs to cut down on the interceptions, period. But the interceptions that hurt us are the ones in the fourth quarter. He needs to not do that this game. No fourth-quarter interceptions. Maybe one in the first or third or second even. You know, hopefully it's not where the Lions are driving, and he ruins a good drive, but he's just got to try to not throw as many inopportune interceptions, which I know is kind of silly to say, but really, those are the ones that hurt you the most, so you need to cut down. It's the decision-making. You have to not make stupid decisions. You know, maybe Stafford should be a little more conservative in his decision-making when their lines are driving or it's close.
Yeah, but I think the main point in Stafford's performance this year is going to be if he does throw in the interception, go back to the bench, talk with Lombardi, and get it worked out so he doesn't do it again.
Yeah.
And not be so, you know, nonchalant about
throwing a pick.
Yeah, that's the main thing for me in sports. You gotta be competitive. I'm a really competitive person, so, you know, I'm full of emotion when I play. And
did you see Colson last week for the Saints? He fumbled the ball, and the Falcons gave the Falcons a chance to win it, and he came down and slammed his helmet. Colson, he cost the Saints their last two games, really, technically, too, because in that playoff game, he threw the ball forward, so it's been frustrating for him. But, yeah, that's the type of emotion that sometimes it's okay to show. But Stafford, it's important to keep your cool, too. Stafford's got to have a happy medium. But I think it's important that the fans know that he cares is what you're kind of trying to say, and you know, show that he cares and get maybe a little frustrated, give him a little extra motivation. But he's got to stay within himself, as the famous sports saying goes, and just, you know, stay calm because he's the leader out there. And he's got, you know, the best wide receiver in the league to throw to. So when in doubt, he can throw it up to Kelvin. So that really helps him out in those types of situations. So I like what we're seeing down at Stafford. He's doing really good so far, and I think this week he might play a little bit better than most people expect. But if he has a bad week, it's also not the end of the world. He has to come back and rebound, because not every week's going to be a good week. But the keys for him this week, I think we're saying, is to show some emotion, stay under control, and not throw the interceptions, though, and it could be a really close game. So it'll be fun to watch this week.
So besides Stafford, there's a couple other quarterbacks that are big stories in the NFL right now. First being Robert Griffin III. I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the show, but I'm a pretty big RG3 fan. Also the Baylor Bears. And there's been some talk about maybe RG3 being a little overrated. And
his coach came out and said after the loss that he thought was inexcusable that they couldn't get in the end zone. Jay Gruden had some pretty hard comments on RG3. But I think RG3 is going to be the starting quarterback for the rest of the year. It's not like Kirk Cousins has more talent, but RG3 has a long way to go, is what a lot of people are saying. Well, RG3 is a West Coast quarterback, and you know, he's obviously not top of the line because I feel like those guys are the ones getting their teams to the playoffs, like year in, year out, like Russell Wilson and Kaepernick, and then Cam Newton you could even put in there and Luck, even though I think they're still not quite there as far as, like, they're probably better overall stat-wise and stuff, but Wilson and Kaepernick can really lead a team in the playoffs. But anyways, back to RG3, he's probably below those guys for the West Coast quarterbacks, but he could be up there, he's got a lot of talent. But the ACL injury makes it hard for him to run, and he doesn't have the best team around him. But the thing is, I think, you know, you have to get in the end zone, especially, you know, at least once, because that's pretty bad to not score a touchdown in a game. And I think RG3 really needs to work on it, because it showed that he's got a little bit of ways to go. Like, he needs to work on being able to get in the end zone and maybe throwing. And his running might not be all there yet because the ACL injury still, and it's carried over, and there's been a lot of things where they've said, like a lot of games in the preseason where they said he got hit really hard and looked really awkward after running. But I think RG3, he has the talent, but right now he's just not the player that the Redskins want him to be, and I think he has a way to go. So
yeah, well, okay, well, here's what I see.
A little bit.
And as a fan, of course, I'm going to stick up for him a little bit. The offensive line in Washington's not giving them the best chance. It's very weak, but there are teams who have weak offensive lines who still have quarterbacks who do succeed in the passing game. But, I mean, RG3 is just not going to be that guy. You know, he reminds me of... you know, a Russell Wilson guy can't throw the ball, but he's not. RG3's arm is a little bit weaker. From what we've seen, scouting reports and things, Cousins, of course, he's a little bit more accurate in throwing the mid, you know, the 10 to 15 yard pass than RG3 is. But RG3 can get some short passes in there, and
it comes in his legs mostly.
Yeah, but I just don't think that they're using him correctly. I mean, in college, he was the read option quarterback, and because of his most recent injury to his knee, which he said is healed, the trainers have said it's healed. That's why they're not making him wear the big bulky brace anymore. He should be able to run a little bit.
Okay, do you think Jay Gruden's a good coach or a bad coach for RG3?
Well, it's yet to be seen. But I mean, if he doesn't let him use his best tool, then. But, I mean, well, from what Gruden said, it comes a little bit in the stubbornness of RG3. He says RG3 is stubborn with his competitiveness.
That was one of the things I sure too wasn't listening to coaches.
And that he takes, like, when he does get the call to run, he's stubborn about wanting to take extra yards, even if it costs him a big hit.
Which is why he might get hurt too, especially because he's a big injury risk. I mean, he's not that big of a guy. Let's be honest, he's a pretty small guy.
Yeah, and
when it comes to quarterbacks, so he's an injury risk.
And that competitiveness or stubbornness or whatever you want to call it is going to be a problem for him, because if he can't learn to take the hit and be smart when go down when the defense closes in, he's been ragged on for a couple of awful slides.
Well, he's got to use stubbornness in the right way. It sounds like he's using it in the wrong way. Maybe he's not for personal gain, because a few yards can help the team, but he's just got to use the stubbornness in more of a right way, and that might be able to help him. Like, more of if someone's slacking, you got to, you know, get him back to the line quicker or whatever. when the clock's running down or something. But because you can use that attitude in the right way, but doing stuff that might be stupid comes with the attitude, and you can fix that, though. You know, he can learn how to train himself, you know, how to not maybe, you know, take the few extra yards and maybe just slide because the team is ultimately going to need him if he's, you know, if he's that talented. But Washington's probably not going to do that well this year. I think this year is the main concern for them is it's a developmental year for RG3 and maybe the team gets better because it doesn't, I don't know, I mean, the division's pretty wide open. You know, if the Eagles have a down year, it's pretty wide open, but, you know, the Eagles are obviously the favorite, and the Cowboys and Giants are probably better than the Redskins overall talent-wise. So I just think they really need RG3 to grow and show kind of what he has, and in the offseason they might be able to get some of the parts that help him do better. But it's going to be an interesting year. Jay Gruden and RG3 got to get on the same page and work together, and that's kind of what this year is, I think, for him. It might be a little bit of a rebuilding year.
Yeah, and as I said, I do like RG3, and I agree, and I believe in his ability. But the bottom line is, Gruden has to put a winning team out there, week in, week out. And if Gruden has to make the tough call of maybe giving Cousins the chance, then that's what's going to come down to. Maybe RG3 will stay as the backup, or maybe he'll go to a team that can better suit him.
I don't think he'll stay anywhere as the backup. I think he's got too much talent. Ego, per se, maybe. Not ego, but too much talent. I could never see him staying anywhere as the backup. He's just too valuable. He'll work in somebody's offense. I don't think he's like that overrated to the point where he can't start. I just think right now people are making him out to be a little more than he is. He's a good, talented quarterback, and he's led the Redskins to the playoffs in his rookie year, but he just needs to really straighten it out now because he's not doing as well, and he didn't even get him in the end zone. He really needs to have a good bounce back week this week, too.
Yeah, I think his main goal for the season is maybe going to be turning some of that stubbornness, channeling it into competitiveness and making it, but being smart as well.
Yeah.
So that's what we think he needs to do. We'll see if it pans out for him this season. So in arguably the biggest news in the NFL this week, you know, we're not going to go into too much detail here, but we've all, of course, heard and seen the Ray Rice video and heard all the outcry that came out about it.
Then last night, well, we're about ready to start up the podcast because we started up last night, the deleting and stuff. We were just getting the news about Adrian Peterson, and Peterson, he looks like he definitely went too far in beating his kid. And then, of course, there's the call for Roger Goodell's head. And there's also the new drug policies that got put in place this week. So Wes Welker can come back. He's probably the biggest headline player that can come back because of him. But there's a few players that can come back. And then Josh Gordon can come back after 10 games, even though I think in the future it'll be 8, since Gordon's suspension was before the new agreement went into place. It's going to be 10 games. But so there's a lot of controversy this week and a lot of calling for Roger Goodell's head. So,
yeah, there's been some public outcry over, you know, when Ray Rice was first suspended. Like I said, I'm not going to give too much opinionated info here, but when Ray Rice was first suspended, there was some outcry over the fact that he only got 2 games for, you know, his case in domestic violence.
Well, there is the famous meme, if you will, going around on Twitter, you know, or I've seen pictures of it and stuff where, you know, guy smokes weed on gets a year suspension, guy is allowed to beat wife 2 games, good job NFL. So obviously you could tell the public's opinion on it.
Yeah, in my quick opinion, a lot of that has to do with, you know, Gordon being a repeat offender, but
and you should be able to. You know, all opinions, everybody has their own opinion on legalization of marijuana and its culture and sports because, you know, if it gets legalized in the U.S., it's going to have an effect on sports you know, all the sports, because there's collective bargaining agreements that, you know, make it illegal. But if it's for, you know, suspendable, so it's illegal to the fact that you, if you get test positive for it, you get suspended after, I think, the second test in the NFL. But each league has their own policy. You know, it's going to have its own little effect on each sport.
Yeah, I agree. So, if you'd like to give us your take on what's going on with the most recent updates on the NFL policies, whether it be the new policies on drug testing that's just waiting to be cleared by the Players Association, or whether it be on the new domestic abuse policies, being the first offense would be a half game, or half year. Yeah, half season, 8-game suspension. And so if you'd like to give us your opinion on either one of the policies changes we discussed, or anything else you've heard so far on this week's podcast, you can email us at nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at nsfsportsreport. And give us a follow, too, if you can get on Twitter, and it'd be greatly appreciated if you could follow that account. We will follow back. So, yeah.
Fall's upon us, which means the beginning of football season and the end of baseball season. But that just means there's a bunch of pennant races. So, the MLB season's coming to a very interesting end, though. And the postseason for most teams is 14 to 16 games away. As we record this, I'm going to go through division by division and kind of break it down for you, because I want to talk a little bit about who's going to get in and who's not to the MLB playoffs and just how good I think some teams are. So, first we'll start off with the AL East, where the Orioles have all but pretty much clinched the division. Their magic number is 5 as we record this. And, they have 88 wins, and Toronto's in second place with 77. So they're going to clinch pretty soon after this is published. So they're definitely going to the playoffs, and it looks like they're going to be the 2 seed because they're 5 wins behind the Angels for the best record in the AL. They're 6 games ahead of the Tigers, who lead the AL Central with an 82-66 record at the time of recording. And that's the only real race as far as divisions go is the AL Central. The Tigers have a half game lead over the Royals right now, and the Indians would have to have a pretty big comeback to be able to win the division, because they're behind 2 teams and 5.5 games off the lead, and they're 10 games from being eliminated from the division, but they're still in it. It's possible, even though it's probably not going to happen. And I like the Tigers in that division because the experience and they're just coming together, and they're really looking good. And Kansas City isn't playing 900 baseball anymore. So I like the Tigers in that division, but I wouldn't be completely surprised if the Royals still made the playoffs. And they still obviously have a pretty good chance in the division, even though I like the Tigers. They've been in this before in 2012, and that was a lot of the same team. And they can come pull through here. I mean, they had a big home run tonight, Alex Avila. They were down 4-3, and Avila hit a home run in the 8th inning to put them ahead 5-4. So they know how to win big games. And then in the AL West, well, it looked like the A's were going to run away with that division the whole entire year. And then they traded Yoenis Cespedes, which turned out to be bigger than the additions of Jess Samardzija, John Lester, Jason Hamill. And they're now 11 games behind the Angels, who are 93-55 behind Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. So the Angels won that division. They're literally going to clinch probably quicker than the Orioles. They're going to clinch within a day or two of this big podcast being published. So, you know, they're a really good team. They won 10 straight. They're really talented. I do have some concerns for the Angels, so I'm going to address in a few minutes. I'm going to go through the last 3 divisions, though. The Nationals have their division wrapped up in the East pretty much, too. They have a 9.5 game lead on Atlanta, who Atlanta's been surprisingly disappointing this year. They're only 2 games above 500. And the Mets are actually closer to the Braves than the Braves are closer to the Nationals. I don't think anybody expected that. So The Braves have been probably the most disappointing team in the National League this year that I can think of, besides maybe the Reds. So they pretty much let the Nationals have that division. And the Marlins were in playoff contention for the wild card, but it looks like that's going to be Donovan Stanton's injury. I mean, when your best pitcher and your best hitter get hurt at any time of the year, it really dooms your hopes. And now that the Marlins' best hitter's out, they've had Jose Fernandez out for most of the season, so I think that's supposed to do them. But the Marlins have certainly shown some progress this year, and they look like they're going to at least win 75 games, which is what I predicted coming into the season. And then in the NL Central, that's one of the closer races that's still left. The Cardinals have a 3.5 game lead, though, and it looks like they're probably going to hold on. They're the best team out of the group all around, and I think they're going to hold on, and they're probably going to be the 3 seed in the National League, because in the NL West, the Dodgers and Giants are battling out, and they both look really good pitching staffs. They look like they both have good hit offenses, too. Each one took turns in the series they're playing right now. At the time of the podcast, they've played 2 games. The Giants won the first one 9-0, and the Dodgers won the second one. It's 17-0. I think they won it now. I know as we're doing the podcast, we've been checking the scores, and yeah, they won 17-0. So Zach Greinke had a 2-run homer. It's pretty cool when pitchers hit homers, but it looks like I think the Dodgers are going to win that division. They're just better than the Giants, but it really wouldn't surprise me if the Giants won it. So that leads me to the wild card races. In the AL, the Blue Jays are 4 games out, and the Indians are 5 games out, along with the Yankees. I think those teams are all pretty much done for. So it looks like there's going to be 4 teams competing for 2 wildcard positions, but one of the teams is going to win a division. So either one of Detroit, Kansas City, Oakland, or Seattle is not going to make the playoffs. And if I had to guess, I would have to say Seattle. But if we go by what's going to, how they've been playing, Oakland would miss out on the spot probably. But Oakland just beat Seattle. So Seattle pretty much has to win the game tomorrow, Sunday game, to kind of stay on it and not fall too far behind. But the Mariners have good pitching, and if they make it in that game and they can somehow end up there that they have Felix, they could be a real threat to the Angels in the first round. And they have a big series coming up against the Angels later this week, so I'll have to see how that goes. And then in the NL, there's the Giants and the Pirates are in the wild card spot right now, and the Brewers are 1.5 games back, and the Braves are 3 games back. Then the Mets and the Marlins and the Reds are all not eliminated, and the Phillies and the Padres too are at it because they're not that far behind. But they're not. None of them are going to make the playoffs. They all have a losing record. The Braves and the Brewers are the 2 teams looking out that could get in. Like I said, the Braves have been really disappointing, and I don't think they're going to make it. I mean, they're not playing real well right now, and a team that's 75-73 and not playing well is usually not a good combination. They're probably only going to win like 83 games probably this year, somewhere around that number. And the Brewers were really hot, but they've cooled off. And I just don't think the Brewers have it in them. I think they're one of the teams that were started off hot and was able to maintain a good record, and then they're going to end up around 500. So I think the Pirates' spot, as long as they're 7-3 in their last 10, so as long as they keep up at that pace, I think the Pirates and the Giants or the Dodgers will have the last wild card with the winner of the Giants Dodgers battle getting the division. So if I had to guess, I'd say the playoff teams would stay the same right now as they are, which would set up a Kansas City Oakland showdown and a San Francisco Pittsburgh showdown. And those would be interesting. I think the Giants would probably beat Pittsburgh. And I'd honestly take the Royals, even though the A's have more pitchers to choose from. The Royals have a pretty good pitching staff, so we'll have to see if they can maintain the wild card if they don't win the division. But I like the Tigers. They're made for the playoffs, you know, and I obviously want them to win. We're from Michigan. We're Tiger fans. But, you know, we got to see this team up close. And they've had their struggles. Their bullpen's obviously not their strength. But if they can get innings out of their starters in the playoffs, they're a dangerous team. We saw that last year in the ALDS, the last few games in the ALCS. When they're starters went deep into games, they usually were lower scoring. Like, they lost one of the games in the ALCS last year 1-0 because Verlander gave up a home run to Mike Napoli in, like, the 7th or 8th inning. So they just need to, their offense needs to show up in their bullpen. It doesn't have to be perfect, but their bullpen has to be pretty good. in the playoffs. And the bullpen's the main concern. But I think the Tigers, as long as they're kind of hot and their offense continues to hit, they have a good chance for a world championship. The Angels, they have the best record in the MLB. And I know on last podcast I said I think the A's will rebound. At the time, the A's were only like a game or two. They might have still even been ahead of the Angels because the collapse has been amazing. The Angels have went just the complete opposite direction as the A's. It's like one team is going north and the other is traveling down I-75 south to Florida. And the Angels are the team that has been going north up in the division. And the thing is, though, their schedule has been extremely easy. So they're going to... Their big test is that Seattle series. They need to go in and win it. And if they can do that, I might like them in the playoffs. But they seem like a team that might get bounced in like the ALCS or something. But they have the best record in the MLB. You can't count them out. But they have some doubts about that because their schedule. And they need a guy like David Freese or somebody to step up in the playoffs along with Trout and Pujols. Their offense will be pretty good then. And losing Garrett Richards certainly will hurt them more in the playoffs than it does in the regular season right now. And the Orioles, they have good pitching, but they don't really have an ace, and their pitchers could easily get roughed up in the playoffs, so that's still concerning. So once the playoffs go to the AL, like pretty much any team could come out as pennant winners. Like I said, I like the Tigers in the playoffs, but the Angels, I'd have to say, are really tough too, even though, like I said, they played a weak schedule, and I want them to prove themselves. So heading on to the NL real quick, I like the Dodgers. I think they're the best team. But the Nationals have a good pitching staff, and you can't count out the Cardinals. And I think the Giants could be one of those wild card teams that could move up into a World Series, possibly. I mean, it's an even numbered year, so the Giants, it's their year, according to the past. They won the World Series in 2010 and 2012, and they had losing seasons in 2011 and 2013. So if the pattern holds true, they're going to be the world champions this year. But the Giants are definitely going to make the playoffs. They have a 4.5-game lead over the Pirates on the second wild card. So they're the best at wild card teams in either league. So the NL's going to be a really tough battle because they're all bunched up. So, I mean, the Cardinals could still be the one seed. The Nats could be the one seed like they currently are. The Nats could be the 3 seed. It's just really all bunched up right now. But if I had to pick a favorite in each league, I'd still stick with my Dodgers-Tigers prediction. And the secondary team from each league, I'd pick the Angels as a secondary team, and the Giants, probably. The Giants or the Nationals. I'd probably take the Nationals over the Giants in that now. But either of them, it could be a threat. So that's my quick look at the pennant picture. It wasn't very quick, but that's the look at it. There's a lot of teams that don't have a lot to play for anymore, except to see what they have next year. So it'll be interesting down the stretch for all these teams. But the three divisional races, I like the Tigers, and I like the Cardinals to hold on. They have the biggest lead out of the three close divisions, with air quotations, because I think the Cardinals, 4 games, or 3.5 games up with 16 to play, is pretty steady lead. I mean, teams have choked worse, but I like it. And then the Dodgers, I like the Dodgers over the Giants, especially if they win tomorrow at AT&T Ballpark and take a 3-game lead. So, It'll be a fun October, and like anything can happen once you get into MLB playoffs, so we'll just have to see.
Yeah, there you have it. A couple quick thoughts for me when Nick was giving you his little analysis. You know, the Angels have had an easy September schedule, but it's still hard. It's hard to argue their talent level when they're almost 40 games above 500. And I'd also have to go with the Tigers. Call us biased, but they're just a good playoff team. And
they don't really have a weak spot in their pitching rotation, which is probably the biggest thing when it comes to playoffs, I think.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to ask you one thing for the listeners here. If Sanchez comes back for the playoffs, what do you think would happen to our rotation?
Well, Lobstein's been a pleasant surprise for the Tigers. He's probably not going to keep up at the pace that he is forever, but he could be a good long reliever next year, a valuable part of a team. But he's obviously going to go to the bullpen in the first round. I think it's pretty safe to say Anibal's done for the regular season. If Anibal feels good enough to come back, I think they're going to throw him in the bullpen. And let's just say, I like Verlander in the playoffs, even with his, you know, he's he hasn't had the velocity, and he's probably, this offseason, going to have to work on a few things and change it up a little bit, his pitching style, and hopefully that'll work for him. But if Verlander struggles in the first round, they could throw Anibal in the rotation for the ALCS if they advance, where Anibal, I think Anibal would have to be in the bullpen for the ALDS, though, to do that. It all depends. Anibal's injury is really, it's really hard to predict where he's going to come back because he's been throwing. They've showed him on the Tigers Live throwing and stuff, but there's no timetable really for his return. So, like I said, I don't expect Anibal to be on the ALDS roster, but if he is, he'll be a bullpen guy. He could throw some valuable innings, and then, like I said, he could probably stick there if everything remains normal for the playoffs. Or he could come in at any series. He could come in even if he misses the first two series and feels okay to pitch in the World Series. The Tigers want to throw him on the roster. They can put him on the roster there. And then if something crazy happens where one of the starters, like Verlander, gets bombed, he can come in the rotation. And you've heard my crazy idea that it'll never happen, but, like, say Anibal's healthy in the ALCS, if you really need to win a game, you could pitch him the first two innings and then pitch Max Scherzer the last seven innings. That would never happen. But if I were a manager, it would be something I'd try. Maybe if I was feeling lucky that day, it'd be something I might try. But that's obviously not going to happen. But, like, the most realistic thing is Anibal comes back and pitches out of the bullpen. But there's always the chance that he goes to the rotation. But it's hard to come back from an injury and be thrown into, hey, this is ALDS Game 4. We need you to win so we can win the series. Or we need you to win so we can stay alive for the series, you know. So I don't think for the ALDS we'll see him in the rotation at all. But there's always a possibility for the ALCS or World Series if a guy struggles. But somebody has to struggle, and I don't think anybody's going to struggle outside maybe Verlander. But I like Verlander in the playoffs. Verlander in the playoffs, as long as it's not the World Series.
It's very hard to argue with Verlander's playoff numbers. I have him pull up here, and in four ALDS games, he's 4-0. He's undefeated in the ALDS with a sub-2 ERA. So
the only time he struggles is the World Series. And I think he's had three starts, but two of them were as a rookie. And then he had the Pablo Sandoval game. But, I mean, you can't call those fluke games. But honestly, I think if you pitched another World Series game with his stuff that he has back then, that he doesn't go 0-3. So, I don't know. I think he's a little bit better in the numbers. I think two of them were as a rookie. That's hard. I mean, especially game one of the World Series, he started in 0-6. That's hard to do as a rookie. And then Pablo Sandoval had three home runs off of him, and Pablo just had the upper hand that day, you know? And I think that made it a rough outing for Verlander altogether. But he's obviously not the same pitcher as he used to be, but I still think the playoffs can pump a guy up. Like I said, the numbers tell you a lot, but some guys respond differently to different situations. Like when it's like a do-or-die game, some guys are afraid to pitch in that. It changes their mentality, and it really can affect their numbers. And I don't think Verlander, I think Verlander's one of those guys who goes out there in big games and says, I'm going to put the team on my back, the team needs me here. I think he's one of those guys. And he hasn't shown it this year, but the playoffs are a whole new season. It's a whole blank slate, and I think that could help Verlander.
Yeah, those big games, he's shown, he goes out there and just embraces the atmosphere. And like you said, just goes out there and, as you said, puts his team on his back. So that's what we got for the end of the MLB regular season. Enjoy, and the playoffs will be upon us very soon.
Enjoy the pennant races, they're always fun.
This week, we decided to implement a little bit of a surprise segment called Would You Rather.
Now, let me warn you, I let Austin come up with the Would You Rather, so the questions he's about ready to ask me. So, I start laughing uncontrollably. I didn't know the questions beforehand, so I'm just giving you a fair warning.
Yeah,
these are going to be interesting, I have a feeling. He gave me a sneak peek of one of them, I think, unless he changed it.
He didn't have much of a say in what these were, so. Okay, so, would you rather be Bill Buckner or Scott Norwood?
Okay, I'm going to go with Bill Buckner on this one. Because Scott Norwood pretty much sealed the deal that the Bills were going to lose the Super Bowl. Where Bill Buckner, he made the error and everything, but it was in Game 6 of the World Series. So they had a chance to come back the next day and win it. Now they would have won it without Buckner's error, the Red Sox, but they had another chance to win it. Whereas the Bills really didn't have as much of a chance to win it. So I'm going to go with Bill Buckner. Plus, he went back to Boston a few years ago and everybody loves him. or I think Norwood would probably still get beat up in Buffalo, to put it nicely. Still haven't won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'd have to go with that one too, because I'd have to go with Buckner on this one too, just because of the fact I think baseball fans are a little more forgiving, and the fact that Boston has won a championship
since then,
and
Buffalo isn't quite.
The Bills are just pretty much awful.
They lost 4 straight Super Bowls, if my memory recalls right.
Yeah.
That was probably closest they got to winning, though. Poor Scott Norwood.
And now they have the great E.J. Manuel as their franchise quarterback.
Well, yeah. It just goes to show that being a kicker might be kind of an easy job, but mentally, it's not easy. You have to be able to kick a ball really far, but, you don't do as much on the football field as other guys. But it goes to show you that mentally, it's probably really, really, really probably one of the hardest positions in sports. So. All
right, number 2. Would you rather drink a vial of No Sean Marino tears or listen to...
Got me the worst question ever already.
So would you rather drink a vial of No Sean Marino tears or listen to Stephen A. Smith rant for 8 hours straight?
I'd rather listen to Stephen A. Smith rant because...
Oh, no.
Yes, because... Dude, it's gross. It's not even sanitary. How is that... I don't want to drink someone else's. Wouldn't you throw off? Knowing these are No Sean Marino's tears. They're the tears of a great running back, but I don't know. I'd rather put my ears through it. Maybe it'd help me fall asleep or something. Even though he's not. Stephen A. Smith's a runner, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry, No Sean.
So for those of you who don't know, I hate Stephen A. Smith. I hate him with all of my...
ESPN hating heart.
Everything. He's the most hated man in the world in my mind. He just sounds like such an idiot to me. I hope he hears this too, so maybe he'll think about what he says a little bit more.
Yeah, he wouldn't just be. We're gonna go from 0 listeners to -1 listeners.
I'm gonna tweet the link at him. You know that? I'm gonna tweet the link at Stephen A. Smith.
I'm sure he's going to take time out of his day. We'll see.
I'm sure he does. And
he's like one of those athletes that take time to retweet the haters for motivation, Ron Kaepernick. The haters.
Haters. I'll even tweet it a time. I'll even tweet him a time in the podcast to skip to. Okay, so that being said, I would definitely rather drink a vial of No Sean Marino tears.
But how big is a vial, though? I'm diabetic, so I have to deal with a vial insulin. It's a vial is not that big.
I don't know. You said vial, so.
A vial.
Alright. Anyway, Stephen A. Smith, I strongly dislike you.
Did we spit out the No Sean Marino tears?
No. Swallow them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you could, but I'd swallow them before I listen to Stephen A. Smith for 8 hours straight. Anyway, number 3. Would you rather get tackled at full speed by Jadeveon Clowney?
Alright. Or?
Get hit in the face by Cristiano Ronaldo free kick.
Well, I think I would rather probably get tackled at full speed by Clowney, because there's a risk that he'd break my bones, every bone in my body. But a Cristiano Ronaldo free kick to the face with, I would have to have facial reconstructive surgery. I think that would be, more money. It costs more in medical costs. No, but Ronaldo, he kicked the ball, last year, and it was a wild free kick. Well, not wild, but it went over the goalpost, and it, broke a poor kid's hand. Broke his wrist. And he had to, I think he got the kid a signed soccer ball in the end, so, I guess that makes up. And the kid could be like, guys, guess what? Cristiano Ronaldo broke my wrist. That would be a pretty cool story to tell. But... it would probably hurt more, too. I like my face more than... I would take a few minutes of pain, maybe a broken rib or two over that.
Okay, for me, it honestly depends on... Well, I didn't really look into this question too much, but... am I allowed to wear pads? The pads might make a difference in my decision on this.
And, are you just standing there and Jadeveon Clowney just gets to come plow you over?
Yeah.
That would be exciting to see. Are you running at... Can you be running at him, or do you have to be
standing there? You're standing there. He's coming at you
I say he just blindsides you.
Oh, yeah. But you're looking at him.
Oh, yes, I get to see that. My life flash before my eyes.
Yeah, so if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick the Ronaldo free kick. Just, I don't know. I don't want a freight train coming.
Wow, you disagreed with me on 2 of 3. Looks like when we do the truth, or what's that TV show called? There used to be a TV show. It was like, it wasn't like, it was like a truth or dare type of TV show, but like you had to eat bugs at it and stuff. You definitely wouldn't be doing the same thing as me on the sports edition. I forget what they call it. I'm going to make it my life's mission to figure out what that was called tonight now.
The Fear Factor?
Fear Factor, that's what it was. I never watched it. It's too gross, man. They eat bugs and stuff. How could you? See, I can't eat bugs or drink vials and tear.
All right.
Tear ducts. All right, now we're going to
moving on
to a more serious sports matter. Not serious, but more of a...
Next up will be a quick little recap of the West Michigan Whitecaps playoff game we attended last week.
I can finally check off going to a minor league baseball game on playoff game off my bucket list. So,
and also give you a little bit of background story and what we think of the emergence of Whitecaps outfielder Wynton Bernard. Okay, so now we finally get to tell you about the song we decided to play at the beginning of this week's podcast.
That song's 305 to My City by Drake, and at the beginning, Drake goes, I get it, I swear that I get it about a million times. But Wynton Bernard, he signs a lot of his tweets as, I've seen him tweet at least once or twice in his tweets say, I get it. So I think it's kind of like a little bit of a sing for him, maybe, or something like that. I've never really asked him about it. I got to talk with him for like 2 minutes one time before a game. But he had an MVP season this year down in West Michigan, along with, he's one of two Tiger minor leaguers that won MVP of their league. Steven Moya did too. But Bernard, he got released by the Padres, who drafted him out of a small college. And Bernard, you know, it didn't look like he had much of a chance to be, you know, being honest here, because he was like a 36-round pick. But every once in a while, one of those picks comes up and rises and makes it to the MLB. And the Padres obviously did not think Bernard was that. But the Tigers have an open tryout in Lakeland every year, which is pretty cool, I think, because it's a great way to discover maybe a guy that gets overlooked, because it happens. I mean, there's, you know, the U.S. is so big that there's bound to be some talented individuals that get overlooked, whether they've been in a major league organization or not. And he went to it, and it impressed the Tigers so much they signed him. And he went to West Michigan this year because he would have been playing for Fort Wayne if he were still with the Padres, who the Whitecaps played in their playoff game, ironically. And Bernard, you know, he started off the season pretty good. And then Bernard started hitting really well. And by the Midwest League All-Star break, Bernard found himself in the All-Star game. He was doing really good. And he kept it up in the second half. He kept his pace. He ended up setting the West Michigan record for hits. He led the league in batting average. He hit like .322. And he had a really, really good year. And it surprised a lot of people. Now, Bernard's 24, so he's a little bit old for the Midwest League. I think when you look at average ages, he was a little bit older than the average age in the league. But any time that season happens, it jumps out to you. And Bernard's not a top prospect for the Tigers, but he's certainly got to keep your eye on, because he hit well. He can steal bases really well. He got caught quite a few times, so maybe that's something he'll work on this offseason. Bernard seems like a hard worker. And I really like him. He's a really nice guy, and he seems like he's a really motivated individual. That's where I think the saying comes from, too, and why he uses the song as his at-bat song. That's just a guess, though. I've never personally talked to him about it. But I think that Bernard he seems like he's a hardworking guy, and I know there's a lot of hardworking guys in the minors, but he has a lot of special tools, so if he can keep it up and maybe do really well starting off at Lakeland next year, maybe he can get to Erie by the end of the year, and I think he could have some sort of impact on the Tigers, because he's He's good with the glove. He can play multiple outfield positions, and he's got room for improvement. And he might be a little bit older, but that doesn't mean that he can't help the team out and, you know, and be a pretty good player at the major league level. So Bernard's really emerged. You can't really put him in like a top 10 or maybe even maybe top 20, I don't know, of a prospect list. Yeah, but he's just got to keep proving everybody wrong because he's doing everything he can right now. He's doing a great job, so you can't discount somebody like that. And he'll probably start next year at Lakeland, or Erie, we'll see, probably Lakeland. But I think Bernard is a really good player, and I think he has more of a chance to make it than the average guy who is, drafted. I forget what round it was, but he was drafted in the lower rounds. But he's very athletic, and he's very gifted at athlete, and I like his makeup just overall. He just seems like a guy who really understands what it takes to get there and is willing to apply himself and better his tools to get there. So I like what we saw to Bernard this year. He couldn't have done much better at the level, and I think he's going to work to improve some things this offseason. He could make an impact in Detroit, or at least his debut within the next few years. So I know you have some opinions on him too, so you can go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a drastic improvement in Bernard, especially this year. Obviously, Nick talked about how he was released by the San Diego Padres organization in January, and of course this year he won the Midwest League MVP, so that's definitely some improvement. Well, not just some improvement, that's a great improvement. But from the scouting reports and what we've personally seen out of him, I believe he can do a lot more. He has a lot more room for improvement, and when he was being looked at in the open tryout, he was described as just being very athletic, speedy. He ran a 6.6 second 60-yard dash, which would be first base to third base. So it's a very athletic guy, pretty quick in the base path. He stole a lot of bases. Maybe he can work on not getting caught as much. So
that's something. I mean, when you're in the minors, usually fast guys get caught a lot more than, like, you'll see major league good base stealers get caught because they're a little more inexperienced. But once you get, you know, that's something you can definitely work on, because that doesn't have to do with speed as much as timing your jumps and becoming a smarter base runner. And he's a really smart guy, and he seems like he can really, you know, he listens. He seems like the type of guy from watching him play and just reading some articles about him and 2-3 minutes that I've actually, you know, heard him talk and I asked him maybe a question or two. But he seems like he really is willing to do anything to improve himself. He seems like he tries his hardest to become the best player he can. Not everybody is like that, even in the minors. Some people are very, very blessed individuals. Like, some pitchers can throw 95, 96 that are left-handed, but they never apply themselves and don't have the motivation, and they don't end up becoming anything and never making it to the majors. He seems like he really wants it. Can really smell the, you know, smell the dream of getting to the majors.
Yeah, he did say he'd be willing to play winter ball for the Tigers, but at this point, I mean, I don't think anyone would say no if they wanted a real shot and they think they had a real shot. So
I don't think the Tigers picked the Arizona Fall League guys going to the Arizona Fall League, and they didn't pick him. And the Arizona Fall League is like the best Fall League winner. It kind of runs into the winter. I think it really does run into the winter. It's in Arizona. And it's the best league to go to if you're like a young prospect. But there's always opportunities to play out of the country too. You could always go out of the country. So that'll be something to watch out for. It's always fun to see what guys do. It doesn't mean too much, but they can definitely learn a lot and improve on some things. There's different coaches there. You know, it's always good to get more than one mind on, more than one opinion than maybe, you know, your minor league coaches or the organization you're with, and maybe they can help you fix some stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what Bernard does. But do you have anything else on Bernard? Because we can get into the game a little bit now.
Yeah, just that he's, like we've said multiple times now, he looks like he's got some promise and a little bit of way to go to improve. So we'll see what happens.
It's all crap in the minors. You just got to keep performing. And he seems like one of the type of guys can do it, but we'll see next year. Okay, so moving on, we saw the White Caps play the Tin Caps. It was a Caps matchup. It was game two of the first round of the Midwest League playoffs. I'm going to really quick explain how the Midwest League playoffs go. Alright, the Midwest League is a Class A, regular Class A. There's three types of Class A. So there's advanced, regular, and short season. They're just regular. So they're four steps from Major League Baseball. And in the Midwest League, there's two divisions of eight teams. And the top four teams in each division get to the playoffs. So basically, this was like the ALDS or NLDS of the Midwest League playoffs. And the Whitecaps were they won the first half of their division. So they were the number one seed. And they played the Tin Caps, who squeaked in as the four seed. But unfortunately, the Whitecaps ended up losing the series 2-1 to the Tin Caps. And tonight, the Kane County Cougars ended up winning the Midwest League. So congrats to them. They're the affiliate of the Cubs. And the Cubs, you know, have some promising prospects, so it's no surprise that they won it. But we went to the series, game two, and it was the only game in the series that the Whitecaps won. Kevin Zomek pitched for West Michigan, and he did a pretty good job once again, as he had done all year. He got kind of snubbed for the Tigers minor league pitcher of the year award from his own teammate, Oscar Kubica, but I think Zomek has more promise and upside. But he did really good. He strikes out a lot of guys because he's got just the nastiest curveball probably in the whole Midwest League. I mean, I can't really be the judge of that because I haven't seen everybody in the Midwest League pitch, but it's pretty nasty in all of the Whitecaps games I've been to. It's the nastiest curveball I've seen. He's left-handed. He doesn't get it up real high. I think he can hit 93 when he's really on, but he sits normally at 91 and can hit and hits 92 once or twice an inning when he really rears back and gets it. And he seems like he's a pretty promising pitcher, and he had another good outing, but he had a high pitch count, so he didn't last very long. So, but we got to see him pitch, and once again, he was impressive. I know you really like him.
Yeah. He's my favorite player on that team, and, I think he's got a lot of promise, and I hope to see him one day at the big league level.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a guy who has a potential to get there. And there are two other pitchers that pitched in that game. Zach Reininger, I know I probably mispronounced the name a little, but he had a really good year as a reliever. He's going to work his way up, and he's got some potential. And then Robertson, he had to repeat West Michigan this year. He was down there last year for most of the year, but he really improved, and we'll see. He's another guy who has some potential. We'll have to see. But there's only two runs scored for the Whitecaps in that game, and they came off of a Rafe Rams double where he got to third on a throw home. And then Bennett Picard, organizational catcher, his sack fly ended up being the game winner. So we've already been through most of the prospects down there. I mean, we just told you a bunch about Bernard. Javier Vancourt went 0-3. He had a bad playoff showing. He didn't get a hit to playoffs. The only new guy down there really was Mike Gerber, and Gerber had a really good end to the regular season, and he's not a high draft pick and isn't like a top 30 prospect, but he's a guy to keep around because any guy that performs at the minor league level, I'd keep an eye on, because even if they don't have the tools and people say they won't make the majors, if they're performing at every level they go to, I mean, you shouldn't ignore them because they're just proving, you know, they're basically proving everybody wrong, and every once in a while, guys like that make the majors. But on the Fort Wayne side, they didn't have many top prospects. Their first-rounder, Trey Turner, is the most impressive prospect on that team. And he went 0-4 that day, but he's really quick. But we didn't really get to see him show much off. He looks like he still has a way to go to get to the majors, though. So we'll have to see. And then Kevin Zomek was so nasty that Fernando Perez, he's probably their second-best prospect for the Tin Caps, he had to be removed from the game because he started to swing because it looked like a breaking ball was going to break, and he started to swing. Or it might have been a fastball. This might have been a fastball that he got hit on. There were two guys who got hit, though, and one of them was a breaking ball. I think one of them was a fastball. And if I recall right, I might be wrong on that. But Perez started to swing almost. He didn't quite get his bat around, so he did get to take first base. But he had to be removed from the game because he hurt his hand. He did come back and play for the Tin Caps in the next round, but it knocked him out for the rest of the series. We didn't really get to see him play, but I've heard some reports that he's pretty impressive. The most impressive guy in the Tin Caps for me was Nick Schultz. He's an undrafted free agent, and he hit a home run, and he tore it up partway in this year. So, I mean, once again, it's the guys with good numbers in this game, besides Zomek, because Zomek is a highly regarded prospect in the Tigers organization, but all the guys that people thought were organizational fillers were the ones making noise in the game. So he's a guy maybe to keep your eye on because he seemed like he had some power and he hit it off the bottom of the scoreboard. And shout out to their pitcher Cody Hebner. He didn't have the best regular season, but he definitely kept him in that game, which is big in a playoff game. So that was a good job by him. But there wasn't like too many great prospects on either team that we haven't talked about in this game. But it was an interesting game. The minor league press, you know, are definitely a little more intense and a little more interesting. So I thought it was fun. It's something I never got to experience. And I thought it was pretty fun. They handed out some rally towels and stuff. So I thought it was a good night because the Whitecaps won. And we got to see some playoff baseball. And it's cool to see how the guys react in a playoff situation because, you know, one day you might be seeing them in the majors in a playoff situation.
Yeah, it was definitely neat to see how the atmosphere of a minor league game compared to that of, you know, a major league baseball game or even some of the other levels we've seen of, you know, high school minor league baseball or whatever you may contribute in that category. But it compared pretty well to that. The stadium was packed and it was a good experience and we hope to be able to see many more Whitecaps playoff games as we go along. And with that, that just about wraps it up for this week's episode of the podcast, fourth installment in the NSF Sports Reporters series. One last reminder, if you'd like to comment on the show, you can tweet us at NSF Sports Report.
Please. I'm usually on that Twitter account, and I like to talk to people about sports. I'm bored.
And if you do happen to get on there, give us a follow.
Please.
And you can contact on Twitter or by email at nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com. And we're hoping to have our website up by tomorrow.
We're going to get it up after this, right after this. I'm making him do it.
And that will be notsofamoussports.wordpress.com.
We're not famous enough to buy our own domain yet, so make us famous enough, please.
So thank you guys for listening to this week's installment, and enjoy the rest of your week.